Welcome to another episode of the Deborah Health Report, where we dive into current health and medical topics to keep the Delaware Valley informed and updated. Last month, we discussed the future of heart rhythm care. This month, we discuss the current state of heart valve treatment, repair, and replacement. Here's Rasa Kay.
Hi, I'm Rasa Kay. Valvular heart disease affects millions of older adults in the United States, with many unaware of it. A heart ultrasound can reveal it, but patients typically only get one when they report symptoms, such as breathlessness, chest pain, or dizziness, or when a doctor hears an unusual murmur during a physical exam. So getting it diagnosed is one challenge. Treating heart valve disease can be another. Medical science has been chasing alternatives to open heart surgery for decades and has made giant strides in valve disease repair and replacement. And we talk with Deborah interventional cardiologist Dr. Muhammad Raza on how that's all going.
Valve disease is relatively common. It happens in 2 to 3% of the population in this country. The prevalence increases as we age. It's fortunately very manageable, especially when it's caught early on. That's why it's really important to diagnose early on and take care of it until it's more advanced. In general, it is very treatable. Almost any valve disease at this point is treatable compared to 10, 15 years ago when only certain number of patients could get treatment because the only treatment used to be open heart surgery. Whereas in this day and age, with the technological advances, we can almost manage any valve disease in any subset of patients.
Let's break this down first then with the types of valve disease. Stenosis, regurgitation, prolapse, and atresia. So break this down for me.
Yeah. The heart has four valves, and the purpose of valves in the heart is to allow blood flow in one direction. For the proper functioning of the heart, the blood has to go in one direction, and the valves make it happen. When a valve is not opening properly, that is stenosis. And when the valve is not shutting properly, it is regurgitation or leaky valve. Atresia is more congenital, where the valve hasn't developed enough. So vast majority of patients have either a valve that is not opening properly or not closing properly. The prolapse, will come to it in a second. Now, why valves don't open properly? Vast majority of the patients have wear and tear as we get older, and the calcification deposits on the valve makes it stiffer, and the valve doesn't open properly. Whereas the regurgitation or leaky valve, that could be of multiple reasons. One of them is prolapse. So, for example, in mitral valve disease, the mitral valve is the valve that sits between the left top and bottom chamber of the heart. It can have prolapse. So people could be born with a tendency to have prolapse early on. And as they age, the prolapse gets worse. So what does prolapse mean? For proper functioning of the valve has to be opening properly and shutting properly. When the valve shuts, it is a watertight seal. But patients who have a history of prolapse, a segment of the valve or two segments of the valve can prolapse backwards into the left atrium. And that predisposes for regurgitation. And if the prolapse gets worse, the regurgitation gets worse. The prolapse in itself is mostly in patients who are at risk or born with it, whereas there are many other reasons for valve not to shut properly. One of this is when the heart is dilated, something that leads into a congestive heart failure. So in those conditions, the left bottom chamber of the heart dilates, and the leaflets of the mitral valve are inserted in the ventricle, so they also are pulled apart. And when the valve is supposed to shut, it doesn't shut as a watertight seal, rather leaves a gap, and that's where the regurgitation happens.
Which type do you see the most often?
So there are four valves in the heart. On the right side is a tricuspid valve that is sitting between the right top and bottom chamber of the heart. Then it's a right exit valve called pulmonic valve that leads blood into lungs. And on the left side, between left top and bottom chamber of the heart, there is a mitral valve. And then on the left side, there's an exit valve called aortic valve. So out of these, aortic, mitral, and tricuspid are the most common. And all of them are more prevalent as we age, also consistent with the wear and tear of the valves. In regards to which one is more prevalent, in general, all of them are very prevalent, to be honest. But I think mitral valve disease is more prevalent than aortic valve disease, and the tricuspid valve disease is even more prevalent than mitral valve disease.
Are any of them bound to cause symptoms more than another valve being burdened?
Yes, yeah, so the valves on the left side of the heart, that is the aortic and mitral valve, they cause more symptoms or earlier symptoms than the valves on the right side of the heart. Mostly because of the pressures on the left side of the heart are higher, much higher than the right side. So any malfunction of the valves on the left side of the heart, so to speak, aortic valve disease or mitral valve disease, those patients will have symptoms much earlier than patients who have tricuspid valve disease.
So this is not generally a wait-and-see kind of situation. If a valve issue is detected, it's something that's got to be corrected immediately?
So that brings us to different stages of valve disease.
Okay.
We label them as mild, moderate, or severe. Mild valve disease means it's in the early stages. In general, that would never cause symptoms. It is only diagnosed on the imaging with an echocardiogram or by the examination from a physician. Moderate disease is more advanced than mild, and the severe is a category of valve disease when something has to be done. Mostly to correct that disease is there's some sort of intervention is to be performed. When we have mild disease, we can keep an eye on that patient and that valve and monitor the progression. Some patients, the valve disease stays stable for a long time, whereas others, it can progress to moderate and from moderate to severe. When the patients are in the zone of moderate to severe or severe, that is when we start looking into what interventional therapies we can offer to those patients, obviously based on the symptoms.
Do symptoms correlate with disease progression, or can this be a silence problem?
That's an excellent question. So it's interesting, some patients with the same degree of valve disease have more symptoms than others. Part of this is the compensation mechanism from the heart. So the heart and the body is trying to compensate for a malfunctioning valve. In some patients, the symptoms are earlier than others. But in general, when the disease, the valve disease in the severe range, vast majority of patients end up having symptoms. And even if they are asymptomatic, one needs to be mindful that patients very often underestimate their symptoms. And that is when a physician has to dig deeper into their everyday activities. For example, if they are shrinking their lifestyle, many patients actually attribute that to getting older or aging. Whereas when we diagnose a severe valve disease and we discuss with the patients and we say, look, you know, this is not you getting older. It's not aging process. It's rather the valve causing your symptoms. They are, in a way, pleasantly surprised because it's something we can fix and help them and get them back onto their usual activities they like to do. I would say in severe disease, valve disease category, one has to make an effort to make sure is patient truly asymptomatic or is attributing the symptoms to other reasons. Aging is one of them, or allergies, or the weather, and I hear a lot, or my knees are hurting, that's why I can't walk. But we have to be more mindful and more doing more due diligence in that kind of patient subset.
All right, then let's talk about what those symptoms might be at any stage.
Yeah. So the most common symptoms of valve disease are shortness of breath, chest discomfort, dizziness, fatigue, and lower extremity edema.
So with swelling in the around the ankles?
Yes. So swelling in the legs is one of the common symptoms, especially valve disease of the right side of the heart. Also, the fatigue is a common one. Because
what kind of fatigue?
So let's say you used to do usual activities of everyday life and you enjoyed doing walks every day, walking the dog, playing golf, going to shopping mall. And now you started to cut back on it because when you are doing these activities, you get tired, fatigued early. It may not be the knee pain. It may not be getting older. It may be that there is underlying valve disease that is preventing proper circulation of the blood through the heart into the body, and the body is not getting the proper nutrition and oxygen, and that is making people fatigued and tired.
Would you call that a stamina or an endurance type of issue?
Yeah, the endurance or stamina goes down with valve disease because the stamina actually comes by the heart able to keep up with the demand from the body. So let's say we are exercising in the gym or we're walking outside. When we are exerting, doing physical activities, the body is needing more blood flow. And the heart is normally able to keep up with the circulation of blood. However, if the heart has a valve that is not properly functioning, either it's not opening properly or closing properly, then the blood circulation through the heart is impacted and so is into the body. So the pumping function of the heart is impaired because the valve is not functioning properly. And that decreases the blood flow into the body. So there's something called supply-demand mismatch. So essentially, the demand has increased when people exercising or walking or doing physical activity, and the supply cannot keep up with it. And that mismatch leads to decreased endurance and stamina and also leads to fatigue and tiredness. And that's how actually people start cutting back on their activities and start shrinking their lifestyle.
So many times we talk about fatigue, and it's a stamina thing, yeah, as opposed to, man, I really feel like taking a nap, which is not necessarily if you're in the middle of your day and, wow, I really feel like a nap, well, that could be an entirely different ball of wax. Whereas this is like you just don't have the oomph or the juice to do stuff at the level you were doing.
We struggle with this from the patients, and because these terms are so interchangeable. Fatigue, tiredness. Do you not want to do things because you get fatigue and tiredness? You don't want to feel like doing anything to start with. We dig deeper into it, but many times when people say, oh, I don't want to get out of my couch because I just don't feel like I didn't sleep well, that's one thing. But if they say, well, I don't want to do it because I don't want to have the same experience I did last time where I'm going to get tired quickly, so I'd rather just sit back, that is when people are starting to cut their lifestyle.
When they have to start thinking, maybe something is going on.
Yes.
Can you hear it with the stethoscope?
So the first step in diagnosing valve disease is getting an examination from a healthcare provider. One of the examinations is to auscultate the heart with a stethoscope and be able to hear murmurs. And those murmurs then further get investigated with an echocardiogram, with an ultrasound of the heart, a very simple test, outpatient, tells us everything about the heart, the function of the heart, the function of the valves, are they functioning properly or not? So we can really diagnose this very quickly.
When we talk about some of the risk factors, what might those be? And say somebody was having like a calcium score and it came up pretty high. Would you then take a look at their valves just in case, or is that all part of that kind of assessment?
A risk factor for valve disease, there's some familial tendency. So patients with a family history of valve heart disease, they are at higher risk of valve disease in general. So the family history is important. In regards to calcium scores, when we say calcium scores are high, it in general refers to calcification of the blood vessels of the heart, which may correlate to some degree to valve disease, but not necessarily all the times. And I think that patient who has high calcium score of coronary blood vessels should get further investigated by the healthcare provider just to make sure that, A, their heart function is okay, and the echocardiogram could be performed in those patients, and some of them will end up getting diagnosed with valve disease.
Used to be open heart surgery to repair or replace a wonky valve, but now it's different. We've got the minimally invasive options. So, well, it's not a brave new world because we've been doing it now for some time, but the benefits.
Yeah. So, as you said, the traditional approach to treat valvular heart disease was to have an open heart surgery. As the name indicates, open heart surgery is a very invasive procedure, and there are many patients who are not even candidate for a sternotomy and opening the chest and repairing the valves and putting the patient on the heart and lung machine. That is a very invasive surgery. In this day and age, thanks to technological advances, a vast majority of the valve disease can be treated through a catheter, and that is a minimally invasive approach with a shorter recovery times. So let's take an example of aortic valve disease. That is the valve most often has stenosis. It's not opening properly. It's the exit valve on the left side of the heart. And in aortic valve stenosis, we perform a procedure called TAVR, transcatheter aortic valve replacement, which is a tiny incision in the groin, and a catheter is passed through it, and a wire then goes through the catheter, and a valve is threaded through the catheter all the way into the aortic position. And in general, this procedure takes about half an hour, 45 minutes at the most, and vast majority of patients are discharged next morning. So essentially extremely minimally invasive transcatheter procedure. We've been performing this for almost close to 15 years now. The other procedure, which is around for a long time, as you mentioned, is the mitral valve edge-to-edge repair. So the mitral valve most often has valve disease by not able to shut properly, called mitral valve regurgitation or leaky mitral valve. And we are able to place a clip on the segment of the valve that is leaking, and that brings the leaflets together and decreases the leak. And that is called mitral transcatheter edge-to-edge repair, or MTR. That has been around for almost close to 20 years. And that's also minimally invasive, and patient is discharged home same afternoon or next morning at the most. And the tricuspid valve on the right side, that's the valve that sits between the right top and bottom chamber of the heart. We also call that a forgotten valve because for many, many years, this valve did not get enough attention or therapy for multiple reasons. But fortunately, now we have same techniques, transcatheter techniques to repair by a clip, or we can completely replace the valve through a catheter also, and most patients also are able to go home next morning. So definitely a great advancement in this transcatheter therapies. And also, it brings up to the most latest technology, which is to replace the mitral valve on the left side. I mentioned about the repair or MTR before, but now we have a therapy where we can completely replace the mitral valve through a catheter. And in general, patient can go home same in 24 to 48 hours. Again, very minimally invasively and extremely short recovery time.
That's Deborah Interventional Cardiologist Dr. Mohamed Raza. Join us next time to learn about the newest non-invasive treatment for mitral valve disorders, a game changer for patients whose only option, if they're candidates, has been open heart surgery. Until now, the pod drops the first Wednesday of the month. I'm Raza Kay.
You can always listen to all of the informative Deborah Doctor interviews at DeborahHealthReport.com. Schedule an appointment at DemandDeborah.org.